presented by the U.S. Travel Association.
Hey, good morning. I'm Playbook co-author Eugene Daniels. It is Thursday, June 20th. There's one huge thing driving the day, and also tomorrow, and also a little bit of next week. Over the next 2 days, the Supreme Court is likely to go through a huge chunk of its nearly 24 cases left on the docket. In the old days of the Supreme Court, the end of a term would be defined by one or two maybe big cases that could upend the political or cultural moment. Those days are gone. By our count, there are at least 22 cases left to be decided, a relatively high number for this late in the calendar. And while by their very nature, any case that makes it to the highest court in the land is one of consequence, there are several that stand out for their potential to affect your everyday life and the law of the country. And now joining to walk me through not all, but some of the Supreme Court cases we're expecting decisions on this week and possibly next is senior legal affairs reporter at Politico, Josh Gerstein. Josh, hello, sir.
Hey, Eugene. Good to be with you again.
You, my friend, and your team are probably exhausted. So I hope they're done soon so that you guys get a break.
Yeah, it's been a weird year or a weird early summer for the legal team between the two huge political trials for Trump and for Hunter Biden, and now going straight into Supreme Court decision season. We haven't really managed to catch our breath yet.
Yeah, it's like the legal community doesn't care about your guys' sleep. It's so weird. So the way that we're kind of looking at these 22 cases which are left, there are a couple of cases that touch on former President Trump. There is an abortion case. And there's a couple of kind of social media regulatory cases that I want to get to with you. So first, I want to start with the two Trump cases. There is the obvious big one, probably one of the biggest cases when it comes to presidential power in American history, is the immunity case, right? And then there's Fisher v. United States, which is not fully a Trump case, but we'll touch on his case with Jack Smith. So I guess walk the people through Trump v. United States and kind of what you're anticipating and what we heard when they had oral arguments earlier this year.
Well, I mean, the Trump versus United States is clearly the biggest case of the term, I think, sort of on the merits. And politically, there's sort of no question about it. It might be the biggest political case that the Supreme Court has decided in a decade or so. Trump's lawyers are arguing that there's a near absolute immunity for a former president being prosecuted over most anything that he did that is arguably in any way related to his duties as president while he was president. And if they prevail in the broadest version of their argument, it would basically force the dismissal, I think, of special counsel Jack Smith's criminal case charging Donald Trump with conspiracy to overturn the 2020 presidential election. So sort of a lot of the chips are on that particular square. And, it did seem at oral arguments like many of the justices were concerned about the potential for this kind of a prosecutorial power to be abused. It seemed like they were more concerned about that than whatever Trump did related to the 2020 election. But it wasn't totally clear that they were going to go hook, line, and sinker for Trump's arguments. So a lot of us are expecting an opinion that would require some kind of triaging of the Jack Smith case. Interesting legal outcome, political outcome. That would mean it's even more unlikely that this would get to trial before the election.
The final kind of reproductive access case of the term is Moyle v. United States. It has to deal with an Idaho law. And it is really, it seems, the first case that they've heard that's on a singular state's abortion ban since Dobbs. What are you looking for when it comes to Moyle v. United States?
Well, you know, I'm looking for whether we see the signs of moderation that we've seen from some of the court's conservatives. It was basically a 5-4 decision from the court in Dobbs, the case that overturned the federal right to abortion 2 years ago. Since then, there have been sort of noises and signs that perhaps some of the conservative justices who joined that opinion don't want to be portrayed as, outliers or extremists, and that not like they're interested in knocking over precedents left and right. And so the question is, does that have any purchase in this particular case about Idaho's law? It does seem like the justices were a little skeptical at the oral arguments that this was as much of a problem for Idaho's law as the Justice Department was suggesting. This is sort of a statute that basically says if you go to a hospital emergency room, they have to treat you. It was designed to deal decades ago, you know, with the private hospital chains that were just refusing treatment to people that would sort of bleed out there in the emergency room because they didn't have an insurance card. And the federal government passed this law saying if you take Medicare, you have to treat everybody who comes through the door, at least to stabilize them till they move to another hospital that will treat them. And the question is, does that mean that hospitals are obligated to provide abortions in certain circumstances when it's either a life or death situation or if it's potentially something that could cause major medical complications?
The last two cases I want to talk with you about are kind of like in the regulatory world. And they both, interestingly enough, have to deal with social media. And so the first is NetChoice LLC v. Paxton, NetChoice LLC v. Moody. And essentially, it's about two laws by Florida and Texas state legislatures that were meant to stop what they saw and said was censorship of right-wing voices on social media sites. And then there's Murthy v. Missouri. This lawsuit was brought by Missouri, Louisiana, multiple individual plaintiffs who say that the Biden administration, including Surgeon General Vivek Murthy, were violating the First Amendment by asking social media sites to delete disinformation and misinformation about election fraud and COVID-19.
Yeah, so I'm looking again here at what happens to that six-justice conservative supermajority because, you know, while they are all Republican appointees and three of them, as people know, are Donald Trump's appointees, all three of these cases we're talking about here seem like they're up Trump's alley. You know, he's constantly complaining about what he calls censorship by social media companies, constantly complaining that the Biden administration was, you know, taking down content that it didn't like politically or trying to coerce social media companies to take down content, whether it be about COVID-19 or election fraud claims or what have you. I think it's fascinating to see that those conservatives are not all the same. And even the Trump conservatives may not all be the same. I get the sense that Brett Kavanaugh, for one, and obviously John Roberts, they have a more traditional view of the First Amendment that the government shouldn't be sticking its head in the business of private companies. Whereas we've seen in several cases now, Justice Samuel Alito, Justice Clarence Thomas and Justice Neil Gorsuch saying that they buy into this notion that conservatives are being treated unfairly on social media and that there may be some role for the government to deal with it.
Josh, sir, thank you. Thank you very much. I will let you go. And I'm sending coffee and lots of energy your way and to your team's way.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Eugene. We'll need it.
And for your schedule today, the Senate is in and the House is out. And this evening, President Biden will leave Rehoboth Beach, Delaware, and head to Camp David, where he is going to hunker down with top aides to start really getting into the practice and the rehearsals and the preparation for next week's debate with former President Donald Trump. I'm Eugene Daniels. Thanks for listening.
Presented by the U.S. Travel Association. Air travel innovations make getting there this summer more safe, secure, and seamless.